Welcome to the Rizan Worship Songwriting Podcast, episode 136. I'm Joel Payne.
I'm Chris Juby.
I'm Peter Assad.
And this is a podcast to equip and inspire grassroots songwriters serving in their local church and beyond. In this episode, we will be looking back on a wonderful retreat at Wydale. We will be reviewing the Community Songs Challenge, and we will be setting a new, fun and exciting challenge for July. Woohoo!
Yeah!
Here we are. It's me. Yeah. It's Juby. It is Assad. Great to have you both.
Good to be here.
Peter, we've just seen you in real life, in skin and flesh.
He does exist.
Yeah.
I do exist.
But you just made it back home.
And so does Grace, not just a famous name on the internet.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I didn't make her up either.
No. That's really nice. Peter is a bit of a legend in, I would imagine, in most of the circles he mixes in, but certainly in 12-song challenge circles for just being an instant songwriter. He's usually written the song before anybody else has finished reading the description. And just before we get into anything else, just tell us about that, Peter. What? How? What's going on? Tell us.
I have come to realize I'm a strong starter, so I can get things going pretty quickly. But that usually means I start too many things and I have trouble finishing them. So I basically just don't finish things. And if I don't finish things, then I'm ready to start the next one. That's the short answer.
Yeah.
How I actually did it, like last year, I'll tell you, I gave myself a personal challenge. I thought it was better to start something within the first hour of reading the prompt. That was the goal. As soon as I read the prompt, I gave myself an hour time limit to get something posted. So even if it was unfinished, even if it was just like on the Billy Joel, you know, the Heroes Challenge, when I did Billy Joel's song, I was like, okay, I'm going to write a chord progression. That's all I had so far. But there it was. So within an hour, I posted that. And that was just a personal challenge to just get things going and fired up. And then I'll always revisit as I need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Great to get momentum.
And I have trouble sleeping sometimes. So if I woke up at 1 a.m,
well,
you guys already had the challenge and that worked out well.
You had to stay up late on those nights.
That's it.
I should say it is all boys today. It's not by design. We had various things mapped out, but this is how it has worked out. So it's going to have a particularly masculine flavor for this episode, I'm afraid. But hopefully, you know, hopefully that will be fun. So boys, as we are, we have all just been at the Wydale Retreat in beautiful North Yorkshire. It's been a really special experience. For those who were let's kind of cover for those who were not there or don't know much about it. Chris, you've been to 10 of these. Give us a kind of 30 seconds on what does a Wydale Retreat look like?
Whoa. Yes. So
you've used 5 seconds already.
Wydale is a kind of country house kind of place in North Yorkshire. It's a beautiful setting. We stay there and have lots and lots of open time for writing, but then we are in groups where we kind of bring songs that we're working on, and the group feeds back. Fairly similar to the model that we have in 12 Song Challenge. There's also a track of kind of worship times together and input together. So it's 4 days, four full days of time together and time writing.
Peter, this was your first visit to Wydale. First impressions,
right? You know, the famous words of Travis Hamm, right? Meeting old friends for the first time. Yeah. That is 100% what the experience was. And I was a part of the Smoky Mountains one last time, and that was phenomenal. This was a level up, and only because probably Grace and I had a few days to ourselves in Ireland to just kind of like decompress all the things, you know, just time across the pond. We made sure
the
to post get a
retreat,
couple.
Retreat.
That, the post-retreat retreat, you come in with a new kind of energy, I'll tell you.
Let's pick out a few highlights. I mean, there were nearly 70 of us there this time. Chris, you have been, we think, although the records are hazy, this is our 10th Wydale retreat, and we think you've been to all 10 of them.
Yeah, well, I Andy Clark was in my group in the second one, so I must have gone to the first one, which I have no real concrete memory of, but I must have done because... There we go.
A teenage Andy Clark.
Yeah, wow. He was a young prodigy in those days. Yeah. Played all these chords where he couldn't even really speak yet. Yeah. But, you know, chords. Yeah.
Just your reflections.
It was small then.
Yeah.
We were in a different room. It was much smaller. There was much less of a program. I was absolutely starstruck by meeting Geraldine for the first time. And to be honest, I'm still starstruck every time I interact with Geraldine.
Yeah.
But so many things are the same, like just, great, amazing sense of community. Before I linked in with Resound and before I was going to Wydale, church songwriting for me had been quite a lonely pursuit.
Yeah.
And which kind of left all kinds of room for like ego and ambition and all that kind of stuff. And I have really found that being part of this wider community where we're collaborating on the task and particularly the opportunities that we get to do that together in person, it just completely transforms it from being like solo, like artists, laboring with the sweat of my brow into this communal task. And it's a beautiful thing. Wydale is always a highlight of my year, even still, even when now it's less of a retreat because I'm often involved in leading things. So it's quite a lot of work, but it's a highlight of my year because it's so profound to kind of interact in flesh and blood with our brothers and sisters who are doing the same task.
There's a Wydale sound that people talk about when the people begin to sing. Mm. Peter, what was your first impressions of that, your experience?
You know, it's a beautiful experience when you share a song for the first time and maybe they catch the last line of the chorus, the last go around. But when you've got four-part harmony jumping in on note two of a song that nobody knows, it is outrageous. I stood up on the back row holding up a camera to try and capture it. And it sounded like this weak, pathetic, like my iPhone couldn't help but try to compress the sound into something that was unintelligible. It's wild.
We had Caroline Cobb came and did a concert for us. That was really wonderful. She was doing a UK tour. So we loved welcoming Caroline. And there was a bit where, she invited us to join in one or two songs, and you could see from the look in her eyes that she was like, "Whoa, I wasn't expecting that." But then also there's one where she got Geraldine and Carey to sing this sensitive little three-part harmony number. Man. And it was beautiful, but Geraldine said, as they were sort of doing the intro, she was thinking, there's no way this is just going to be the three of us singing. Because everyone else joined it. Yeah, it is a really special thing. I always think with that retreat, it's such a unique opportunity to give somebody the experience of sharing a brand new song and having people throw themselves into it and sing it and enrich it and make it better. And it's not always like that in our churches. Sometimes it's hard work and it can vary depending on your role in the church. It can vary depending on the quality or the kind of easiness to pick up of a song. But I would say as a kind of a gift we can offer to everybody who comes on this particular retreat. You get to experience writing a song and then hearing voices sing it in harmony and really engage with it, which is really special. Chris, we did a few different things this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. So in the past, the program's been fairly light, really. You know, some input first thing, and then lots and lots of writing time. This time we decided that we would have a little bit more of a focused theme. So we've been looking at this theme of community songs, which has been the 12 Song Challenge theme for the month. That's a theme that we're thinking about more broadly than that. And so we did an exercise that a few of us tried out and workshopped a couple of months ago where we had some kind of input on this idea of what are songs, how can songs be a space in which community is practiced? So we had a workshop thinking about some of that stuff. And then we sent everybody away in small groups to literally write songs in the rest of the morning that they would then, the sole explicit purpose was that they would be leading one another in worship based on you know, the stories that we've been telling one another and what they grasped of where everyone was coming from. And so when we workshopped that in a smaller gathering a couple of months ago, that was absolutely profound. And I was so thrilled that that once again at Wydell, it just, when you are writing for particular people and for a particular moment, and you leave aside all considerations of, you know, how can I make this as widely popular as possible, and you know, in principle, you know, compatible with CCLI top 100 or something. When you leave all of those considerations aside, and you're just thinking, how am I going to lead this group of people, this group of friends, in worship based on where we're all at right now, with no expectation that song will ever be sung again. Actually, it really just unleashes creativity. People are so able to write into the moment. And where sometimes, like, one of the bits of testimony that we sometimes had is that actually, you know, usually loads of people writing loads of songs, but sometimes people have a tough time at Wydell because, you know, inspiration doesn't strike them, and they're kind of conscious that there's all these other writers who are inspired and are working, and that could actually be quite a difficult experience. But something I noticed this year, it didn't seem like I didn't hear of anybody talking in those terms. Obviously, maybe someone did have that experience, and that is tough, but I didn't hear of anybody. And I think part of the reason is because straight away we were just in groups writing together. We'd written to lead one another in worship as pretty much the first thing that we did. And and that was powerful. And some of those songs, you know, then gathered life. I've got some in my inbox now with, you know, people wanting to work those up into songs that will have a longer lifespan. And obviously, you know, it can be amazing, you know, launch for really interesting ideas that do have legs. But actually write it like a sort of a more short-term ministry of songwriting, I think, is a real gift to the church.
Awesome. Chris, you made a statement in one of your talks. You said, what if the people were more important than the song? Mm. And I remember there was just this aha moment for me, because it's like, man, that is the essence of it, isn't it? That the people that, like, you know, sometimes we close our eyes when we sing, and I get it, we're trying to connect with our God, but it's like his image is imprinted on every single person in the room. What if I opened my eyes instead to see him in the people around me? And so it was a beautiful, beautiful message there.
Yeah. You also famously said with great passion, the church needs songs it won't want to sing again tomorrow.
Yes. Yes.
The thing is, in the context, it made so much sense, because you're trying to describe this idea that we need to not have our eyes elsewhere when we write our songs. We need to have our eyes on our community, on our place. And sometimes we need to write for right now, and that's going to bless the church. And the songs that last 100 years aren't going to do that job that the one-day song can do.
Yeah, that's right. And I probably should caveat, particularly for anyone who was there, that I also have been a passionate sort of exhorter of my own worship team that we should be choosing songs that, you know, are going to serve people right to their deathbed and generations beyond. I am a big fan of that kind of writing and those kinds of songs. But I really do think, you know, like it does just change the way we're writing when we're not feeling that pressure. Actually, we can be just really, really specific about what is happening in this room. What is God speaking into the mix? You know, what does this group of people need to sing right now? And, you know, like, actually, we're talking about some of these things are sort of in-joke kind of things, therefore. And it's great. Like, an in-joke is such a powerful thing within a community. Yeah. And actually, the same thing, like, there's a ministry of songwriting, which is the same thing as an in-joke, like, where, you know, like, you wouldn't want to tell it in a big, you know, a comedian can tell it from stage. It would just fall completely flat. But actually, in that group, at that particular moment, it's the funniest joke ever, you know. And sometimes a song can be the most powerful song ever, but actually then if somebody else watched the YouTube video or something, like, they just wouldn't have any sense of why that carried so much weight in the moment.
That analogy of the comedy is so helpful, because it is absolutely true. You could have been absolutely killing yourselves laughing at something together, and then you go home and you try and tell your wife, well, this really funny thing happened, and you sort of see her really trying to laugh with you, but wondering what on earth you're talking about. And that's thing, isn't it? It's sometimes a song is for us for now,
yeah,
and it's fine. And if you wrote, let's not, I won't rehash it.
Come on.
We did a we did a recording. As we quite often do these things, if we've got some songs kicking around, we use an opportunity to record. And we had done this exercise earlier in the year of writing songs for now. And we'd done, there was a small group of us, and we'd written about 24 over the course of several days. And what was interesting was following those several days, three of the songs just began to travel. We honestly wrote them for that moment there. But then we started hearing from people who said, oh, you know that one that you did on the Tuesday? I did that with my small group or my church or my this gathering or whatever. And it was great. And we realized there was just three of them had legs and were running on their own, which was in itself was a really interesting approach to, it's like that example of, you know, do you make one perfect pot over a semester, or do you make 100 pots over a semester, and who comes out with the best pot? And that the study says it's the one who made 100 pots. So there's some of that going on, but there's also just not having your eyes on the industry, not having your eyes on the wider scene, not having your eyes beyond somewhere, and then letting the song be the song it needs to be. And sometimes that song does become a song which will travel more widely. And so often we hear that testimony, actually, don't we, from some of the big famous songs that we've heard, where people say, I wasn't writing it for the big church. I was writing it for this moment. I needed a song for that service or whatever it might be. So anyway, we gathered these three together, and we had a we took everyone out of the chapel into the central hallway. We kind of leaned on sofas and we did away with the PA system and all the rest of it, because we were trying to write these songs which are completely carried by the moment, by the gathering, by the congregation. Peter, you play piano for one of them for us, which is really great. Mm-hmm. Just describe that experience in that room of that moment.
What it felt like was a room full of people who love Jesus, love each other, and cannot help but just erupt in praise. You know, it was just, and something about that, you know, it's a double story, two story open to below kind of a situation. So the sound just felt like it just went straight vertical. Yeah. It really did. Reverberating off of each other. I mean, there's an energy in the room. There's tears being shed. There's just like, there are moments that I'm looking around and I'm seeing someone's eyes and I'm like, wow, they are worshiping the Lord. And it just, so there was this, Chris, I'm gonna pick on, not pick on, but the phrase, you know, my stuff, deal my stuff, right? From your talk as well. and stuff kept showing up. But like the angst within us of like, is this for me or is this for Jesus? Is this for me or is this for Jesus? And in real time, I was finding that wrestling match for me where I'm like, okay, I know this is being recorded, but also I know this is like true worship. And so at the same time, you're wrestling with your stuff in the middle of it and saying, no, this is for him. And so then you share a phrase, because that's what was happening, right? Everybody was sharing a phrase and we all erupt in singing. And then the next person shares a line and we all erupt in singing. And it was just a powerful time.
28th of June to the 2nd of July, 2026. That's what I need to say. In case anybody's listening to this and thinking, I want to come. I want to come early. We've got one booked in. Next year's dates, 28th of June to the 2nd of July, 2026. There's loads more we could say, but it's nice to be able to reflect on that experience together. What I want to say at this point is that we did very much focus on the community theme. We expanded some of the things we talked about in the podcast last time, and some sort of kind of, if you like, kind of memes of thought that have been going around our group for the last 12, 18 months or so. Taking community is this key idea, and particularly we talked about songs that reflect a practice of community, songs that describe a theology of community, and songs that provide a place for community. And we saw these things happen when we gathered, and we did this in community. We wrote for the community. We even looked at how just simply singing together is itself a theological statement, and all this kind of stuff. We wanted to get to the end of this month, but before saying this is our focus for this year, we are going to open this up and start to invite some songs from people to say, have you got anything that you think is going to travel more? We're not only looking for the short songs where everyone calls out a line, although we love those. We're also looking for songs that help us understand community, that explore the biblical images and ideas. And we're also looking for songs that themselves have the character of community in the way that they've emerged and come across to us. So there will be more about that to come. But that's just to say that is in the pipeline. And we're really hoping that this first little collection we recorded will be an initial EP, and it'll be the first of several community songs collections that we do over the course of the next 12 months.
Mm. Wow.
Let us then reflect on June in the 12 Song Challenge. 12 Song
Challenge. One of the things, one of my motivating factors in pushing this theme over the past few months is that we so often at my church need songs that talk about the church and about our community together. And there are so few. And so I think one, you know, probably the most obvious response people are making, there's a bunch of songs at Wydale and on the forum where people are just kind of making explicit and talking about, like, this is what it means to be church and this is what it means to be the family of God. And that's so useful. Like, it's that this is a neglected, even if you leave aside the sort of what's the format and how you're going to lead that song and, you know, what's the experience of singing it together. Even if you leave all of that stuff aside, actually something that the church really needs is kind of, in inverted commas, normal songs that that kind of talk about church, and you know, particularly in that moment where we've had a sermon you know, from one of Paul's epistles, and it talks about what the life of the church looks like or should look like, and you know, what do we sing? Like, we have to take us often, you know, we have to take us of a lateral leap in order to, you know, to engage with that, with how we respond. And it's just brilliant to have so many songs coming into the mix where you can very directly pick up those themes and sing them together as a way of kind of agreeing and processing and you know, speaking into being, like, what, you know, what the sermon will have been on.
No, and I love to thinking about the Trinity and community, a Trinity as a community. And I think a number of people this month were focusing in on that piece and just highlighting the uniqueness of each Father, Son, Spirit, but also the shared triune communal nature of that as well.
I think, like, something that has really struck me is how many people have said that actually this has been quite a challenge for them because church community is complicated. And so knowing what to write about community has been, like, actually quite, you know, like, oh, it's, that's cut to the heart because it begs exactly the question that's, you know, right at the heart of their own, like, journey of faith and walk of discipleship. And so I think, you know, I definitely want to mention that and acknowledge it and empathize with that experience. You know, community is a complex thing. It's it's double-edged, you know, like some of the themes we think about are relatively external to us, aren't they? You know, and, you know, we want them more deeply, but the theme itself is not terribly complicated, whereas this is one that brings up all kinds of all kinds of complexity. And actually, I've really appreciated the songs that I've seen that take that seriously, the hard things about community. Sneak preview, the one that I've
let's jump in there. So we've got this is by Eleanor, isn't it? It's this kind of corporate confession, but it's a corporate confession to allow us to confess to each other as well as to God.
Yeah, absolutely right. So Eleanor's written this song where we say sorry to one another, and it's so, like, it's such a, you know, one of our themes is that there's so much more that songs, the church needs songs that do, or the songs could do so much more for the church than many of us, like, naturally assume. And this is a really, really, you know, there's just a lot of experimenting that we need to do in order to sort of feel what can songs contribute. And this just feels like a really, really powerful and an interesting experiment in, like, could a song be a context in which repentance and reconciliation could take place within community?
Yeah, should we have a listen?
We are sorry for putting ourselves first. We are sorry for causing others hurt. We don't know why, do what we don't want to do. Our Father will forgive us, and that's the same of me and you. I'll forgive you today, I'll forgive you today, and I'll forgive you again, I'll forgive you again, I'll forgive you today, I'll forgive you today, and I'll forgive you again. I'll forgive you today, and I'll forgive you again. But for how many times, or how many times? 70 times 7, when we don't do what we
yeah. So much interesting stuff going on in here, like the way it kind of links in the Romans 7 idea of, you know, like, you know, I don't understand myself, like, why am I behaving in this way? But then that sort of, I guess it's a bridge section where literally, like, there's an echo and we're saying, I forgive you, I forgive you. My goodness, like, I don't know, like, in some ways that, like, I listen to that and I think, wow, that would be quite...
It's would risky, that be intense? Isn't it?
It's risky. Yeah. But then it's got the sort of, there's a note of kind of levity as well in the 70 times seven. So, it, you know, it doesn't get heavy. Like, it would just, I would love to see how that goes and see whether that kind of facilitates something profound.
No, I think it's excellent. And to even tie it in that, is it the chorus in the beginning where it's like, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. There's just this acknowledgement of, how often do we do something that we, you know, didn't realize what we were up to, and others as well. And usually the first thing that happens when someone wrongs me is they knew exactly what they were doing. And this song and Jesus seem to say, actually, maybe they aren't aware. And that's powerful.
It's really good. I love the way you talked about experimenting, Chris. We need to experiment. We need to have a go. We need to not assume that this song or that song won't work. We need to push and see. And sometimes they won't work. And sometimes they will open up our eyes and our hearts and they will change the way that we approach things. Yeah, great stuff. Eleanor was in my group at Wydale and she came back at one point. She said, I showed it to Ian Edgerton and he had some good ideas. And when I looked at it, I said, I think I could tell which bit Ian Edgerton suggested, which could be the 70 times 7. I mean, I'm guessing here, Ian. I'm sorry if I'm wrong, but it does sound, it has the ring of Edgerton about it. Peter, you picked out a song as well.
Yes. So it is by Kath Holyfield, which I found out at the end of last season is her last name, Holyfield. But Kath Holyfield, her song, Echad, or One, she's still titling it. But I love this song because, for one, it's got Hebrew in it, which I'm not a native Hebrew speaker. I don't know if anyone else is. And so you would think, oh, this song probably doesn't fit my context. Mm. And yet it absolutely fits hers. And so I love how she wrote a song specific, using the Shema and other places to speak directly to her church.
Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Lecha Levecha. We come to you with one heart, shoulder to shoulder as one. Lecha, we worship you with
Oh, right? Do you ever watch The Voice?
Whoa.
Have you seen?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, for me, was one of those, the first word, boom, I pressed the button.
Yeah.
I've turned. What? What?
Isn't it just like, it's haunting.
Yeah.
It's ethereal. It's got all these pieces. It's gorgeous. Kath did a beautiful job with this song.
Absolutely beautiful. I love the images as well. It's just these one heart, shoulder to shoulder as one. Is that, I don't know whether that's like a phrase that's come from scripture. It's just this is beautiful.
Well, isn't it funny too, that phrase shoulder to shoulder, that was big in at Wydell. Ian Sparks had a song. Was it a Bega Qua? Bega. Yeah. And so another language representing that exact same idea of shoulder to shoulder, which I think is really cool. Neither of them, I think, had a conversation about this, but the theme emerges either way. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, Peter, you've said it in your comment on that thread, actually, like, this is what our, if we're a movement, it's about this, like a song like that. The church needs a song like that, and it's beautiful. And the fact that, you know, perhaps that has less chance of being CCLI top 100, like, it's so obviously irrelevant. Like, we local church songwriters need to be writing songs like that for their context, because that is so much better than anything that you know, somebody completely zoomed out from their context is ever going to be able to write into their context. One absolutely beautiful song. I like
it's gorgeous. Wow.
Yeah. I think all four chairs turned for that one.
Wrong show, but like golden buzzer, right?
Golden buzzer. That's 83. All right, I picked one out as well this time. And this is this isn't for my team, but then to be fair, I'm on here every time, so I feel like my team's going to get a showing. But this is a song by Stuart Burke, who's actually in Team Yorkshire. And Stuart, he wrote this on the Wydell retreat. He said massively inspired by Chris Juby's talk at Wydell. He didn't mention my talk or your talk, Peter, but well, forgive him for that. but he did. What's interesting, so Stuart's context is that he's a worship pastor. He's been on sabbatical, and he's been on sabbatical because he needed a sabbatical. And he was going back to work at the end of the week. So we finished on a Thursday. He was going back to work on the Friday, I think. And then his first thing was going to be a church away day on the Saturday.
Yeah.
So he kind of had this, right, how do I go back into this thing? And it was, I'm going to bless my community with a song. And I'm going to bless my community with a song that is about my community. And what was really interesting was... he brought it to me, and it had quite a lot of verses, and it had quite a lot to say. And one of the things he described is letting go of his stuff and keeping it, kind of exercising a kind of restraint to keep it simple, so that it's just something, you know, not trying to say all the things you want to say to a community about the rights and wrongs and all the rest of it, but let some of that be implied in the very nature of just singing it together. And so I thought it was really good. And there's just the things about it, with the, well, let's play it, and I'll pick out a couple of things that I like.
Brother, you're my brother. We are cut from the same cloth. We're a child of the same God. Sister, you're my sister. So we'll thank God the Father for giving us His Son, sending His Spirit that unites three in one. So with all of us together, we will join the Trinity, singing praise and deep thanksgiving as a loving family. Brother, you're my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Isn't that a lovely song?
I remember where I was when I heard it, right? He sang this. Wasn't this at the Wydell concert?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so good.
Yeah.
I forgot he sang that there.
The things I... It's really weird, this, isn't it? In a similar way to Chris, we're saying one thing, but slightly want to backpedal and saying that's not our only truth. There's something here. So, for example, the choices in the chorus, you know, the chorus has a kind of passing resemblance to There Is a Redeemer in its kind of structure. But it just makes sense there in that song to now you just unite around this idea of unity in the Trinity and us as family. And using language that we all know in a shape and a form that we all know allows us to do, you know, when he's going to rock up on that Saturday, having not seen his church for however many months, that is the right thing to do. I want to also backpedal and say innovation, poetry, depth, beauty, all this is all really good too. But because of the purpose of this, having the courage, because I know that he had been written so much more, having the courage to pare it back and say, I've got to make this useful the first time we gather. And therefore, also some of the repetition, brother, you're my brother, sister, you're my brother. The first verse is we are. The second verse is we will. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Those brother, you're my brother, and sister, you're my sister lines, like, cut me. And then the cut from the same cloth, same God, like that. Oh my gosh. I love what he's done lyrically in there too.
We're now going to have a little montage with some clips of songs from the rest of the teams. From Team Eccles, we've got Rachel Dunn with Come Move. From Team Cumberland, it's Paul Myers with We Are One. From Team Dundee, rising three places, it's John Mayer alongside. And still in the top 10, from this isn't the chart, it's okay. From Team Stilton, Louise Dutin, I presume, with Alleluia. From Team Kendall, Andrew Davies with the Fun Club song. Oh, yeah. From Team Wensleydale, it's Jandre Berglund, Make Us One. And there, finally, from Team Bakewell, Matt Weeks, When Morning Comes. We've got little clips here, but then do go and check them out, the whole songs on Song Club.
One body, joined by the Spirit, loved by the Father, held in the Son, one people with your anointing, filled with the light of your love.
One God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all.
Table to receive the bread of life, would you call us to each other to stand here alongside? When you call us to the hungry to give them food today, would you call?
Basketball.
finally, we need a star of the month. Peter, you've got a star of the month for us.
Yeah, star of the month this time is Chris Knight. Yay!
Star of the month.
Chris, first time to the challenge, I believe, and I've been so impressed not only with his willingness to receive and give feedback and grow from the feedback he's getting, but he's constantly like in our chatter. He's the one who's like, guys, it's quiet in here. How's everybody doing? And he's checking in on everyone, which, you know, it's just, we're 3 months in. Is it 3 months now?
Yeah,
whatever it is. We're three months. And, you know, the lull starts to hit. We're like, oh, am I really supposed to be here? But, he's cheering us on. So great job, Chris.
12-song challenge.
Okay, here we go. The challenge for July is remakes, spin-offs, and sequels. Whoa. Before we dive into the song side of things, gentlemen, I'd love to hear from you some of your thoughts on we're thinking TV and cinema to begin with. What are some great remakes, spin-offs, and sequels in your view?
So typically, I'm the one who's like, man, they made a movie like that 20 years ago. Why are they doing it again?
Yeah.
That's usually my initial thought. So when something like Joker with a Joaquin Phoenix, like I'm struck and it's so good. So good. That movie in particular, I left the theater weeping. It hit me at a deep level.
Yeah.
But usually remakes, I'm like, I don't want to do that.
for remakes, I got two. They're both musicals, actually. That's interesting. Oh no, one of them's a sequel. Hang on, come back to that. A Star Is Born. There's a story which has been retold several times with different actors, and I just like really interested. Different songs, but it's a story that somehow endures. And I absolutely loved the most recent version with Lady Gaga and whatever his name is, who just kind of I don't know, learnt to sing for the movie and sounds amazing.
Must be nice, man. Wake up. I'm going to really start singing good today.
Yeah.
That's it.
What about sequels? What's a great sequel you can think of?
It's kind of like remakes. It's kind of like leave it at the first one. Usually for me, I'm the bah humbug here. I'll have to think about sequels.
Empire Strikes Back was the sequel to and widely regarded as the best Star Wars film.
But then they kept adding more.
Yeah.
It's like, quit while you're ahead. You know?
Yeah.
That's true.
Mary Poppins 2, that's what I thought of. Okay. What a triumph. How could you possibly have a sequel to Mary Poppins?
Well, Lin-Manuel Miranda, that's how.
Yeah, but the approach there was actually kind of tell the same story with some different things and the same central character, but the whole vibe was very much the same, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to piece the next one, the spin-offs you mentioned?
Yeah, have you got a spin-off, Peter?
You know, I'm a huge fan of Marvel, all the Marvel Universe things. The spinoffs, two spinoffs in particular that were just heavy and amazing were, so one was Loki. It's following the story of Loki.
I really enjoyed that,
Excellent. The last scene in particular is so moving, just seeing how, like, I won't spoil it. Anyway, it's really good. Watch the whole thing. And then the other spinoff that was excellent was WandaVision. WandaVision in particular, he's got that line, it's almost biblical, talking about grief. Like, what is grief but love persevering? Oh, man,
that is
so good.
That is really beautiful. So those are examples of kind of taking a minor character or a minor thread from something and then turning it into its own full-blown story, telling the whole story of that thing, isn't it? Going back to the Star Wars theme, Andor, I've been watching that recently, and it really is the first time there has been a Star Wars spin-off where you think, this is really good. Like, they could just keep doing this and drop the rest of Star Wars. It's that, you know, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we had this little conversation because I wanted to get our heads into this idea, because this is what we're going to do this month. Inspired by this theme of remakes, spin-offs and sequels, I want us to think of a worship song or hymn that we love and cherish, and then I want us to write the remake, the spin-off or the sequel. Let me try and explain what I mean by this. So for a remake of a song, so say it's a classic worship song you absolutely love. When you do a remake, you don't just take the same script and get different actors to do it. You take the broad idea and you repackage it, you retell it, you do it in a different way. So that would be one. It's just take a song you love, a worship song that you love, and tell a similar story, describe a similar thing, but in new packaging. I guess for a hymn, it could be a new set of lyrics to the same tune that are kind of doing the same job. It's more tricky. We'll check in with Chris in a minute on copyright things. A bit more tricky with contemporary songs. Or it could be a whole new song, which just takes those core ideas. Or, you know, if you're feeling too challenged, it could just be kind of, I was inspired by this song. So that's all right. So in terms of the remake, it's really, what is this song? What does it do? Write something new that does the same sort of job. It, you know, it could be to do the structure of it. It could be to do the message of it. It could be the vibe of it. But the spin-offs, that would be to take a worship song that you love and pick a thread from it and say, okay, there might be a kind of a line in there. Maybe that it's one where the bridge is really brilliant and you could kind of take or leave the rest of it because the real meat of it, the core content that you love is in the bridge. Well, how about taking those ideas and taking them into a whole new song of your own? Or just taking a single line or a single idea that it kind of it captures. And I think you want to do it in a way that it has some sense of family resemblance to the original without looking like a twin. And then finally, for a sequel, the question could be, you know, what's the natural progression of the narrative of the song? Now, obviously, for some of those that have a narrative that takes us into heaven and 10,000 years only just begun and so on, you might run out of things to say. But sometimes there's a very clear narrative to a song and you could continue that narrative in a new song. Or sometimes a sequel is to almost tell the same story, but just change the angle that you look at it from. So sometimes, you know, sometimes you get like a trilogy of films and they come from different directions all on the same idea. So you might look at a song and say, okay, it's talked about this thing from this direction. Maybe it's talked about, like we've just been saying, maybe it talked about community from a point of view of joy. Well, I'm going to now take it and I'm going to talk about community from a point of view of sorrow. And I'm going to learn from the structure of it and so on. And then, or finally, what about, what is the song you want to sing next when you do this in church? So you've got this great song that you love. And when I plan worship, in my context, certainly, usually that we're singing two or three songs in a row quite often. And therefore, I'm always thinking, what's the song I want to sing next? So put this one in the middle, this classic, this one that you really love, and then write the song that comes after it. And so let it be part of kind of following the worship journey. We'd love to know what song you're referencing. So maybe you could put that in the title when you pop it up on Song Club. It's a bit like the Heroes Challenge, isn't it? But we're focusing more in on songs than people. What do you think, gentlemen?
I like it a lot. I, you know, admittedly, thinking about the TV and cinema examples, I was like, man, where is this going to go? Yeah. But as you've described it, I really dig it. Like, for example, the sequel concept, where you've got this idea of, I know there's a song by Joe Day called What Have We Done? That is one of my favorite songs to sing for Good Friday. Yep. It's a perfect Good Friday song. It's just, Judas sold you for 30, I've done it for less. Peter denied you 3 times, I've denied you more. It's this kind of, it just gets you right into the story. Oh. But it ends with, what have we done? We have destroyed your son. What have we done?
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I've never used it outside. I hardly have ever used it outside of a Good Friday context because it just feels like it needs something else. But if you're thinking in terms of sequels, what if I write a song that tells the other part of the story, just beyond, you know? And of course, there's a lot to say. There's a whole, you know, several books in the Bible to say about that. And that's a perfect prompt.
There's that brilliant verse at the end of Psalm 22, isn't there as well? Which some people think is what Jesus is quoting on the cross. He has done it. Yeah. What have we done? Look what he's done.
That's it. Exactly.
All right. And okay.
I'm so into this. I love sort of digging into the sort of the hidden threads of thematic structure in songs. Mm. And it really inspires me, the idea that you'd kind of pull out one of those ideas that just blows you away when you kind of see, and that parallels that. And then you'd kind of use that as your starting point for writing a song. That appeals to my imagination a great deal. I think, like, if I'm going to say a couple of words about copyrights, just into the mix. So when we're talking about a composition, so writing the song, not not really talking about recordings and things here, but when we're talking about the composition of a song, the copyrightable elements are the melody and the words. So if you are directly quoting or referencing a copyrighted melody or text, then copyright questions are going to come into play at that point. At that point, you know, like if you used a copyright song and you kind of, you know, used a number of lines from that song as your kind of chorus hook or something like that, then that would be a derivative work of the original song, and there would be a copyright negotiation to be had, you know, with basically the writer of the original song ultimately is able to say, no, I don't give permission for that derivative work to be distributed. So, you know, when it came to it's the same with the other challenges we've done where copyright things come into play. For the purposes of the challenge, do what you like, you know, like in your own sort of scrapbook, in your own home. And we kind of regard the 12 Song Challenge platform, because it's private, you know, it's not, we're not distributing songs in that. Like it's a kind of, it's a notebook, it's a scrapbook, it's a work in progress kind of space. So in the context of the challenge and what you're posting on the 12 Song Challenge forum, just, you know, however inspiration leads, but at the point where you're thinking, I think maybe this song like should be released into the wild, even if that's just singing in my own church, then copyright considerations come into play. And if you have obviously derived your work from the text or the melody of a copyrighted work, then you would need to secure permission in order to do that. For public domain works, which, you know, many old hymns, most old hymns are in the public domain, you can do that as you like.
Absolutely
fine to help yourself. And you don't even have to, like, it's good practice to credit where you've borrowed from. But actually, when it comes to public domain stuff, you know, you can use it and you can claim it as your own when you put it out into the world. Don't do that, but you can. So no restrictions whatsoever. Yeah.
So if Chris Tomlin could do it, you can too. Is that the rule?
If you add a chorus to a public domain, some ways around that people can get around that. So if you are writing, you know, if you've written a chorus to, you know, it, like a valid thing to do would be to write a refrain that in your mind, I want to use that after we've sung In Christ Alone. That's totally fine. Like that's a separate work that you're then going to kind of mash together with In Christ Alone and those kind of mix-ups. Like if you were going to record it or something like that, then, you know, that might be a different story. But certainly in terms of writing something that kind of sits alongside the original work, that's totally fine. I think the kind of thing where you're sort of looking at the themes or the idea or the mood or, you know, even like sort of a key phrase, maybe a key phrase is getting a little bit more towards copyright relevant, but certainly like the underlying ideas or the underlying structures, those are not copyrightable elements in composition, so you can do that. Like if you go down and look at, oh well, so you know, this song kind of asks a question and then makes a statement, and then, you know, or this song sort of talks about the cross and then it talks about the, you know, whatever those kind of structural elements, you're free to do that however you like. So those kinds of things would be absolutely fine.
I don't know where this. Well, okay, so thinking about remakes. Would a retune, like taking an old hymn text but adding a new tune, would that be considered a remake?
For the sake of the challenge, Joel can give the answer to that.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned a new set of lyrics to the same tune. I wondered if it goes in reverse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, it seems in that case, I mean,
what I would say is, because I did write this note down the bottom. Actually, this is interesting. Literally, I wrote, remakes, spin-offs, and sequels don't use the same script, apart from The Office, but that was only for one episode. It needs to be a new song. So I think for this challenge, I mean, hey, as always, folks, you do what you want. We're just here to set some prompts and help you, encourage you and so on. So you don't have to, you know, interpret this how you want.
Here's some rules you don't have to follow.
Yeah, but I reckon... I reckon for this one, we say we're not using the same script. So actually, we're not going to write a new tune for some old words this time. But if you choose to ignore me, It's absolutely fine. I mean, it's all right, isn't it? You do what you like.
Well, here's one that comes to mind as a remake. So I don't know if you're familiar with Page 116. They're no longer together, this group. But the song, you know, I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Down in my heart. It's just happy, clappy, yeah. Whatever. She was sitting with that song and started playing it in minor. And then, so I've got the joy, joy. It's literally the same melody.
Yeah.
But over minor chords, and then it goes to this, I don't understand, and I can't pretend. And it's basically what she did is she added this different set of harmonizations.
Yeah. Or like a counter melody.
Yeah, and then ran into and erupted into this bridge that basically wrestles with the question of, I have this joy, but life is awful right now. What do I do with it? And it's really moving.
Wow.
And
yeah,
I've never sung I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart, but I've done that one before, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that might be an interesting way to remake it. Though, honestly, Chris, I don't know how that fits with the CCLI stuff.
Yeah. Like, for the moment, don't worry about it. I don't know what the copyright status of that song is. One way around it would be to, as I just described, like the your bit, the counter melody or whatever. Because the chord, the sequence of chords is not, that's not a copyrightable element of the composition. So you could take the same chords and write your own tune that works as a counter melody, you know, and that kind of create that like work in and of itself. I would have to probably look into it a little bit more, but that feels to me like something that does stand by itself, even though obviously is referencing potentially copyright work. I assume that probably is copyrighted, isn't it?
And I think a safe way to go around it, because I'm looking at all three of these. All three of these would be a great way of approaching your own songs. So if you were to remake your own song, what would it look like? If you were to spin off your own song, you said this thing, but there was a single phrase that was so full and rich. Maybe unpack that one.
Yeah.
Or you know, sequel. What's this thing that? I can't tell you how many sermons I preached where I thought I had to say everything all at once, and it ends up being horrendous to follow. You can't follow it. There's too much going on. So you learn to break it up. Well, a song can be the same way. Write a sequel to your song, and that can go a long way too.
Good. All right. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, fun.
As always, I've tried my best to make it clear. I've tried my best to give lots of ideas. Apologies in advance if it confuses or bewilders anybody.
Peter and Chris have confused you.
But hey, let's have a go. Find a song or a hymn that you think is great, inspires you, and write a remake, a spin-off, or a sequel. Well, that is all we've got time for this month. Thank you very much, Chris. Peter, it's been great to have you on the pod for the first time. We're going to get you back.
Yeah.
This is really good. And we're going to finish. I'm saying this, I haven't actually listened back to the stuff we recorded at Wydale, but there was a pair of stereo mics right in the middle of the room. So what I intend to do, I say, folks, get your headphones on. I'm going to play the stereo mics for one of those songs.
In the spirit of experimentation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And let's see what happens. Let's see who is standing closest to the mic and whether it worked. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
worthy is the Lamb.
Need you, Lord. Yes.
listen now.
Christ is with us now. Christ is with us now. All our voices join the song. Christ is with us now.
His healing. hand